Chapter 16, Heart Attack. January 19th, Earth. I woke up with a start to the sounds of screaming. It was pitch dark and someone was yelling in the distance. It took a few seconds to mentally transition from talking with a wizard on Mirth to wherever I was now. My visits to Mirth usually started and ended when both Staven and I were asleep. Something must have pulled me out of a deep sleep, and I suddenly knew what it was. That was my mother screaming and sobbing at the top of her lungs. I leaped out of bed and raced down the stairs to find my mother kneeling over my father. She was in the hallway, pounding on his chest, yelling, "Call 911! Call 911!" So I dove for a phone and called for help. As soon as the operator answered, I gave her our address and told her to send an ambulance fast. When she asked what the problem was, I responded that I wasn't sure. All I knew was that my mother was giving CPR to my father on the floor of our house. My immediate thought was that a Mirth agent had found us and shot my dad, but Mom yelled out that he had had a heart attack. The operator heard her, told me that help was on the way, and advised me to stay on the line. Yeah, like that was going to happen. I dropped the phone and ran over to my parents. Mom was furiously alternating between pumping on his chest and pinching his nose while breathing into his mouth. It looked like she was doing it right from what I remembered from my first aid training, but she was so intent that she didn't notice what I saw. "Mom, stop! Stop! Mom, stop!" I yelled. "He's breathing. You can stop now." She paused for a moment and stared at Dad. Then, as soon as she saw his chest rise, she fell on top of him, crying. I had to pull her off before she suffocated him, and she sat back, held me, and sobbed. I've never seen my father so fragile, nor my mother so scared. When I held Dad's hand, I was amazed at how cold it was. He was lying on the floor, trembling and dripping wet with his shirt unbuttoned. I'm not sure how much of that water was his and how much of it was from Mom's tears and sweat as she worked on him, but he was starting to move his head and incoherently mumble. My sister Chloe had just come downstairs and started screaming, so I put Dad's hand in Mom's and ran over to calm her down. I held Chloe, told her that Dad was okay, and tried to soothe her. There was a bang on the front door, and I was shocked to see two firefighters standing there when I opened it. I thought that the 911 operator hadn't understood the problem, but they elbowed past me and quickly strode over to Dad. Two paramedics worked on Dad while a third firefighter took Mom aside and talked to her. A fourth asked how we were doing. I said that I was fine, but that my sister could use some reassurance. They brought in a stretcher after about 10 minutes and strapped Dad in to take him to the hospital. Mom was demanding that we all ride in the ambulance with him, but the paramedics insisted that there wasn't any room. They explained that she needed to follow them in her car. "Don't be ridiculous," came a voice from outside. "Can't you see that this woman is in no condition to drive? Go with Alex in the ambulance, Nika. I'll stay here and watch your children." The voice belonged to Dr. Price, Tyler's mom. "Thank you, Elizabeth," said Mom. "What are you doing here in the middle of the night?" "Your son called and asked if I could come over and watch the two of them while you took care of your husband," answered Dr. Price. Mom turned and stared at me with a look I've never seen on her face before. In fact, I think this was the first time she had even noticed me since this whole crisis had begun. She had never taken her eyes off Dad until this moment. She started to say something, but all that came out was a soft, "Thank you. I love you," before a paramedic told her that they needed to leave and Dr. Price pushed her out the door.
Dr. Price turned to us as the ambulance pulled away and said, "Don't worry. Your father will be okay. Your mother did a great job with the CPR and you were amazing at keeping your head and getting them help."
"It was nothing," I mumbled. Tyler was with his mom and I was kind of embarrassed by her compliment in front of my friend. "No, I'm serious," she insisted. "Very few people of any age would handle themselves as calmly and decisively as you. You should consider becoming a physician when you get older. You would really excel as an emergency room nurse or a doctor or as a paramedic. I should know." Now I was really embarrassed. I also realized that this was nothing compared to some of the situations I'd been through on Mirth. Heck, I'd fought werewolves and nearly died. Then it struck me. This wasn't a dream. This was real, and that was my dad who had almost died. Everything suddenly came crashing down when I realized that I almost lost my dad tonight. I collapsed in a heap as thoughts of living my life without him flooded into my head, and I cried for nearly an hour. The rest of the week was a blur. Chloe and I went to school the next day because Mom was at the hospital and there wasn't anyone to stay with us, but I can't remember anything that happened. Everybody was kind to us, but nobody knew what to say other than that they were sorry. It just felt weird. Our grandparents arrived in the afternoon to take care of the three of us, and we stayed home from school for the rest of the week. Mom stayed with Dad in intensive care most of the time for a few days, but we weren't allowed to see him until Thursday. He was lying in bed, looking weak, with tubes in his arm when we were finally able to visit. It's funny. I had been desperate to see him all week long, but didn't know what to say once we were there. Chloe and I gave him the cards we had made and just sat there, holding his hand and sniffling. Club S&M is supposed to go to the hospital to work on our science project, but I don't want to see another hospital ever again. Mom says that being with friends will help and that I should go. Dr. Price noted that a news reporter will be there to do a piece on us to promote the science fair, so I guess I don't have a choice. I did go to Children's Hospital, but I'm sitting in the back letting everyone else talk. Sean, Malik, and Ethan did most of the work on the project anyway. The guys gave Abdo his prosthetic before I arrived, and he was beaming. Malik, Ethan, and Tyler might not have Sean's electronics expertise, but their design was ingenious. They used springs, pistons, and levers instead of servo motors and sensors.
The concept was simple and elegant, although their implementation was a bit clunky.
Abdo didn't care, though. He could use the stump of his other arm to slide back a lever, which spread out the fingers and cocked the springs. Then he would press a mechanical button on the arm, and the fingers would slowly close. The springs pulled the fingers together, and the guys had installed small pistons used to keep toy chest lids from slamming shut to slow them down. There was even a second slider with three positions to control the order in which the fingers closed. It was pretty slick. Candace's hand, however, was incredible. We had been working with her for weeks, and she could close or open each finger independently. They couldn't move side to side, but it meant she could grasp a pencil, shake a hand, or even play notes on a piano. This was the kind of project that would wow people at the fair and was why the news crew had set up lights and cameras. The reporter started her interview with Dr. Price, who explained what the hospital did and talked about the therapy group. Then she shared how our group had come up with the project concept, convinced her to do it, and done all the design and implementation. Finally, she asked us to describe it. Sean wasn't much of a public speaker and asked Malik to talk. He talked about the mechanical design and she discussed the electronics. Sean became much more comfortable once she was talking about technology and the reporter finally cut her off. It was clear that the pretty blonde woman with way too much makeup had no idea what this 11-year-old girl was talking about. She said, "Thank you, Miss Jackson. Why don't we see what you've done?" Candace's mom nudged her in front of the cameras, and I knew from her expression that we were in trouble. Candace was wearing a pretty, sleeveless dress, and our prosthetic was strapped to her right arm just below her elbow. I still couldn't get over how cool it looked. It was made of light blue plastic and was just a little wider than her arm would have been. You could see the LED lights, cables, and motors inside, and it made this excellent, soft, whirring sound when she moved her fingers. It was sleek, beautiful, and looked like something out of a movie. The reporter asked this pretty young woman to show what the kids had done for her, and Candace went insane. She said, "You want to see what these geeks did for me? What you mean is what they did to me." She waved her arm in front of the reporter, who jumped back in alarm. "They made me a freak. Look at this thing. It looks like something out of a trashy monster flick. Oh, and look at the cute tricks they make me do. Ooh, Candace, the pet monkey can move her fake fingers." She stretched, wriggled, and closed her fingers several times, which was pretty impressive. Then she faced the camera and carefully made a fist with just her third finger extended. "How about this finger movement? They promised me a hand, and I get this piece of junk. I can't feel anything with it, and it makes me look like a friggin' robot. And look at this!" Then she swung her fist against the wall and smashed the hand. Several pieces were bent, while others broke off. We were in shock, and the reporter gasped. Candace ripped off the destroyed hand and yelled, "They could have at least made it strong enough to hit someone hard and really hurt them." Then she ran out of the room with her mother chasing after her, yelling, "Wait, Candace, oh, my poor baby!" Tyler, Ethan, and Sean were sitting on the floor staring at all their hard work ruined and in pieces. Malik was standing beside them, shaking with rage. They were too upset even to say anything. The reporter instructed her camera crew to pack up and shook her head, muttering how they couldn't use any of this material. Then Abdo tugged on her sleeve. The reporter instantly transformed from a grumpy woman who had just wasted an entire morning into a sweet, warm, local television personality with a fan. "And who are you, young man?" she asked in a sing-song voice. Abdo replied, "My name is Abdo. I am in the second grade, and Candace is wrong. These are smart people. They are good people. Look at what they made for me." He promptly held up his oversized, clunky prosthetic hand for her to see, and she asked, "My, what is this?" Abdo beamed and answered, "This hand is everything I need. This is the best thing ever." The reporter smiled and noticed for the first time that Abdo didn't have a left hand either. He saw her expression change and said, "I have never been able to hold a spoon. I have never been able to write with a pencil. But now I can do anything. I am going to be a big movie star, and my new hand does everything I need. You will see." You couldn't help but love this 7-year-old kid with his big dreams. The reporter grinned, the first honest smile we'd seen on her face as she asked, "And how will your new hand help you be a movie star?" Abdo didn't hesitate. "This hand will not make me a movie star. I am going to be a great movie star because I am a great actor. You will see. But now I can hold a spoon and eat all by myself. I can hold a pencil and learn. And I will use this hand like this when I win my Academy Award." He cocked his hand, stuck it out toward her, and clicked the release button with his left stump when she reached to accept his handshake. The fingers slowly curled as she shook his hand, and she gasped with a pleasant surprise. Abdo calmly said, "I want to thank the Academy for nominating me for this wonderful honor." Then he cocked his hand to release his grip, changed the setting, and pressed the trigger again. The prosthetic smoothly flowed into a pencil grip motion, although he did not have a pencil in his hand. Abdo pantomimed signing an autograph and cocked the hand a third time. This time he placed it next to a can of soda before he released it. The fingers curled around the drink, and he lifted it high above his head, pretending it was an Oscar. He puffed out his chest and proclaimed, "I want to thank the Academy for this great honor, and I want to thank my dear friends Malik, Tyler, and Ethan for making this all possible." The reporter saw that her film crew had been recording this and quickly turned to the camera to close. "And there you have it. This is just one of the many amazing projects you'll see at the County Science Fair next Saturday. I'm Leslie Walker from Action News, and I will see you there."